Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. We are excited to have you. Episode 16. Things are going awesome over here in Birmingham, but it's great to have you. Pull a chair up to the table and let's get this episode going. This is going to be a fun one. We've had some incredible guests the last few weeks. This one, again, I don't believe needs an introduction. We'll get to him in a second, but we absolutely will try and give him something. There's no questions about that. As always, my name is Matt Eshy, the head cross country associate head track and field coach at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, UAB. Excited to have you here. We've got an incredible panel, full house tonight. This is going to be great. So honestly, pull a chair up to the table, pop a top. I found out last week, by the way, due to one of our listeners, that there actually is water in cans. It's in Canada. So I didn't even know that, but go figure, the Canadians would do that to you. So if you want to pop a can of water, go ahead. At the same time, get some sweet tea, cup of coffee, whatever the case you have going. Let's make sure that thing's full. Let's get this thing started. But as always, with us, the man whose music you hear the voice, some great blues music from him, our engineer and incredible in-house musician, Darren Flowers. Darren, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing well. I don't know if you guys can see it, but I'm watching the sunset go down right now. It's really nice here in South Texas. I know the listeners at home can't see it, but they can picture it. Palm trees, painted sky. It's nice.
That is absolutely nice. That is beautiful, man. I wish I was down there. Yeah, it's dark outside. No questions about that. Oh, man. All right, we got, as always, trying to figure out how to buy a track on his Marriott card. We got the infamous Scott Williamson out of Nevada. Scott, how we doing?
Doing well. Wishing I was enjoying a nice sunset like that with some palm trees and beach like Darren, but we'll have to do with the mountains here we got out here. So, but excited for this.
Hey, that ain't bad, man. That ain't bad.
Hey, I'll take either one of those things right there. No questions about that. We got the gentleman. We have a gentleman down here from St. Louis University, Mr. John Bell. How we doing, sir?
Doing well, guys. Excited for another week of intense conversation about track and field. So should be a good one.
This one might be intense. This could throw some curveballs to some people, some punches, and you know, as we know, we don't mind throwing curveballs and punches. That'll make it happen. And as always, holding down to the Hoosier land, going with a blank screen in the background, read all the books, everything's good and set and ready to go for that gentleman. But from Bloomington, Indiana, Mr. Mike Erb. How we doing, sir?
Doing very well. Beautiful day here in Bloomington, and looking forward to, you know, solving a lot of problems this evening. So I'm sure we'll get a lot of stuff done.
Absolutely. We solve some, and then we create a whole bunch more. So that's how the world works. But we get some good stuff.
For sure.
And now you see his picture on our little broadcast, or excuse me, our Instagram posts, and everywhere else you've seen it on Twitter. He's an absolute man and a legend when it comes to it. Sometimes you see him at the convention. Sometimes I think the only time you actually see him is when he's up there getting ready to go for the Bowerman, which is an incredible thing. We'll talk about that here in a second. But we are unbelievably privileged to have the myth and the man, the legend, Mr. Sam Seams, the CEO of the USTF CCCA. Sam, how you doing, sir?
Great. How are you guys tonight?
Good. We're excited to have you here. So far, no hurricanes. You know, you got a few maybe this weekend, but everything, weather okay down there?
So far, so good. When no storms get in the Gulf of Mexico, you never know where they're going, and you don't want it, but you don't want to wish it on anybody else either.
No question about that. A couple of us have been in a couple of those storms and seen those things roll over, and those things are scary. No questions about it, but the so why not one thing to get to before we get to your background, Sam. Literally breaking news about an hour and a half ago, we had two world records in the 10K. If anybody saw these, they were incredible. We got Joseph Kipchoge. I can't pronounce his name. I apologize, guys. But he went 26:11. Took down what he had the out. He took down Bekele's outdoor 10. Now the outdoor 5. His outdoor 10K record, which was 26:17. I mean, 26:11 for 10K, 4:12 pace for 6 miles. I mean,
are they drug testing right now?
Yeah,
I hate to bring it up, but I'm just saying, like, are they? I don't know.
I hope they are, but yeah, no, that's a great record, no question.
Either way,
it.
It's incredible.
I'll enjoy it, and I'll believe it's clean until somebody tells me.
Right.
And I mean, again, he ran 13:03 for his last 5K solo, by the way.
Yeah, insane.
13:03. Yeah, that is incredible. I mean, And then Giddy, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce your last name or first name. I apologize, but she went 14.06 and brought the record down from 14.11. The amazing thing I was reading about it, the amazing thing about her is she had not won. She had lost her last 13 5Ks she'd been in, and she had not won one since 2016. And all of a sudden you go 14.06. I hate to say it, Darren said it. Is it drugs? Was it the light? Because they're doing some really cool things with
people. COVID training has gone well all around the world, though. I mean, if you look at some of these performances, I think people forget, and I don't know who said it. I don't know where I heard this, but it may have been on this. Actually, it was on a different podcast, but I think it was Mike Holloway who said this. We have to remember, this was an Olympic year. So people were training, and people were fit and getting ready for an Olympic game. So it's not totally out of the realm of possibility that you saw some great performances in an Olympic year.
Yeah, no question.
That's a great point, John.
Yeah. And again, I apologize to be one of those people that go, is there drug testing? What are they doing? Because unfortunately, that's my mind, the first thing that comes up. But at the same time, I am blown away by how fast these are. These are incredible. So, but anyway, let's get back into it. Let's get into our guest tonight, our incredible guest, taking time out of his busy schedule. We know he works like crazy. He never stops. So, Sam, we'll jump into it. I believe you were the first, am I correct on this? You were the first member, essentially you're the one who started the USTF CCCA?
Not truly. There were several predecessor organizations over the years. Actually, and I'll refrain from saying the oldest, but if not the oldest, one of the oldest coaching associations in the country is Track and Field Cross Country. It actually originated back in the 30s. There have been several, as I said, predecessor organizations since. When I came on January of 2005, just took the name and reorganized the workings of the association. So, as I said, parts of it for years and years. It's been very influential. I wish we were more influential today, but some of you, I don't know, a lot of young guys here may remember back in the AAU when it got broken up. And really, the AAU got broken up by Walter Byers, who was the head of the NCAA, Don Canham, who was a track coach, and later the AD at Michigan, and Bill Bowerman, who was the track coach at Oregon. So that shows how much influence that track and field used to have, and what a major player they were hand in hand at one time. So it's been around in some degree for a long time, but it's got a different face now in its present form. It was always a volunteer kind of organization, and then they had a part-time person before me, and I think the coaches had decided when they approached me that they were looking to have somebody full time and try to become more professional, more everyday situation.
I mean, you're right. It's done an incredible job. It's a big thing. I think, I don't know if we could probably add it up, the amount of conventions, the amount of things that we've been to because of what you've done with the Coaches Association. But one thing I don't know, there's two things I don't know. One, where are you from? Okay, because I know you live in New Orleans now. But where are you from? And then two, if you don't mind, segue it a little bit. How do you become the CEO of the association?
Well, one, if you can't tell by my voice, I'm a hillbilly really at heart. I grew up in a very rural small town in Kentucky. Had one red light.
Okay.
I went to school at Western Kentucky.
Oh, Hilltopper.
Then I migrated to LSU. I got on as a graduate there in 1976 and was there for 13 years. And I've done several other things. But the coaches group at the time in 2004 They formed a group of folks to go out and look for a CEO and come back with a recommendation of somebody to hire. Mm-hmm. And they spoke to me about it. And, I had some interest in it. I probably used my heart and my brain in making the decision because I knew that I didn't have money. I didn't know they owed money. after I got in, so they weren't just at zero, they were minus zero. But like I said, I'd done some things a few years before and had made more money than I'd ever made in my life, which didn't have a whole lot to do, but it's worth me taking the chance. And they offered the job. I took and they recommended me to the group at the convention in Portland that they had with USATF back in 2004. They voted on it. They hired me. I started in January, worked the first year for no salary, which I knew I was going to do, going in. So it was no big deal. And it wasn't a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal. And just kind of went on from there. And I really kind of took the attitude that, hey, I'll take this. And I'm either going to drive it in the ground and break it so it doesn't exist, or we're going to make something of it. That was my attitude coming in. We needed to either do something or stop talking about it. So we've made some progress, I think, on actually doing something over here.
I think it'd be safe to say you've done an incredible job. I think if anybody said differently, I think they should put their heads in the ground because you've expanded it. You've done a lot of things. I know one thing you've done is, you added funding for D1 indoors. You've added TV coverage for D1 outdoors, which has been incredible. I think that's been a huge thing for the sport right there. Two of those things are two small things, but even the Bowerman I know has been your baby for years. And we hear people talk about that. That's one of my favorite nights. I tell every single young coach, even though I know, as you said, we have young guys on here, I tell every young coach, if you're going to come to something for the convention, come see the Bowerman and just the prestige and the mystique that Sam has made it up to be. It is something special.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think it's special, but, I think also special sports and indoor, outdoor, and cross country. And we need to do more and more things to our sports, but also the incredible people that are involved in our sports, and especially the student athletes. It's sometimes I get frustrated because I feel like we've got all these diamonds, but we go out and we're afraid to wear them. We've got them stuck in a safe someplace. Well, why have it if you're not going to expose it? And, the student athletes that we have, to me, are just incredible. I hear all the time people who aren't used to engaging in them, and they see men and women, and they're like, oh, my God, she was incredible. Oh, he was unbelievable. I just can't believe how good these people are. And unfortunately, over the years, and we continue to a certain degree, these very valuable assets that we have. So we need to, I'm a big believer, and we need to create stages where we can show what we have and what our values are. Because if you're out of sight, you're out of mind. And typically over the years in track and field outside of our own little community, which isn't that big, we remain kind of out of sight and out of mind. So I'm a big believer in creating some deals that we've got a stage to expose ourselves, television, things of that sort. All these things are worth us trying to make some sacrifices in how we actually execute things so that we can get into the mainstream of exposure.
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head right there with one of the biggest points is being a part of exposure, making sure that we've got a phenomenal product. We've got to make it better. And that's one of the things we've talked about on this podcast a lot is how do we create opportunities for, they're not opportunities, but how do we showcase our sport? You just said we're a lot of diamonds. I love that. We're a lot of diamonds and we need to have a showcase for it. Is there something, we've talked about different ways to do meets. We've talked about things that we've loved, which again, Brian Fetzer's been on here with his, and we've done, you know, talk about having the distance meet and having a jumps meet, having a vault meet, you know, having a throws competition. And we've seen a lot of phenomenal performances. I think Jordan Gray had a couple world records down with her decathlon she did this weekend. So we've had a lot of things like that. Is there a way you see the sport that we could change it as not only, you know, actually in the collegiate world?
You guys are probably going to jump through the screen and then shoot me with my comment. But I think one of the major things we have to do is we've got to develop a sport. I really question how much of a sport we are versus an activity. I think we need to much better define what we do, why we do it, and what we're trying to accomplish and provide an end result. Now, that can mean several different things, but we've got to start things that relate to people other than ourselves and our own small community. So I think there's a number of things we can do, and I think along with that, we've got to cut down the time frame that it takes to do anything. I'm just going to make a reference to Division One here, the outdoor championships. You know, a few years ago, we changed to gender-specific days at the final round of the championship of men and women. And as a result of that, we got more TV coverage. It was a way to tell a story. It's been really successful. There were dollars going in, but it's been really successful. But it took us 4 years to do that. It had no impact on the qualifying system. It had no budget impact. It was just a matter of doing it, and it took 4 years to do. You know, I turned 68 last week, and I'm not going to be around much longer, and I'd like to see some of these things happen and us be a bigger player in it. 4 year increments to do small things that don't involve money or procedure. We just can't keep moving at that pace. And I think what happens a lot of times with us, I love coaches and I love that they're involved, but we have got to, in my opinion, we have got to get out of the minutia and out of the grass and get up and think about what's happening in the sky. You know, they didn't shoot a rocket to the moon or to Mars by thinking about, you know, how am I going to pay the streets? Streets already been paved. You know, you may want to work on some different asphalt mixtures or some different concrete mixtures or different ways to lay it. Well, let somebody take that and run with it. Let's don't spend 3 or 4 years talking about what kind of rock to put in the pavement. Let's think about where we're going and how we can get there. We've got to get out of the minutia. The minutia is just like you're in your car, you're stuck in the mud, you're not spinning your tire. The frame of your car is touching the mud. You ain't going anywhere. We got to get away from that.
I agree. I've been fortunate enough to help you out. Some people who know me know the podcast and know that I've, you know, about, I don't know what now, looking at the years, maybe 10 years ago, I put a proposal forward to change cross country. And it took a couple of years. And before you know it, it was 6 years later. And we're still going after the small little details. And then all of a sudden now it's 10 years later. And we still have things coming up, but we haven't changed the sport in cross country. We're still the same thing, but nobody wants to because of all the little details. And it's all what's best for Indiana, what's best for St. Louis, what's best for UAB. But it's never about, coaches need to think about, and we've talked about this a lot, what is best for the sport as a whole? Screw what's best for Indiana. Does it help you out? Yes. Can you adjust? Yeah. Can it help UAB out? Yeah. Can you adjust? Absolutely. But we need to as a sport. I love the outdoor championships. I think, if I'm not mistaken, now puts us like the third highest watched NCAA championship behind, I think, basketball and baseball and maybe hockey. I think maybe we might be fourth.
Yeah, we've moved way up the ladder. And I think a lot of this is just like coaching. none of you all coach the same. You know, you've got some core elements that you use, but there's a lot of different ways to get somebody to sprint fast, to run faster at 10,000, to jump longer, to throw further. There's a lot of different pathways to get there. That's been proven over and over during the years. But you know where you're going. And I think that, at least when I coached, I believe this, and I still believe it today, I'm just not applying it. A lot of training is buy-in. You know, the student athlete you're coaching, if you can be the greatest coach in the world, have the greatest process in the world, if that student athlete doesn't buy into that, and if that student athlete doesn't trust you, that training program is worthless. And I think it's the same in our sport. Unfortunately, we don't have our collegiate coaches for sure. We don't trust each other. We don't have respect for each other. And we need to develop that. We need to develop trust so that we don't always think somebody's trying to screw us. That, hey, maybe somebody's actually trying to make us better. We need to respect ourselves, because we walk around saying, oh, well, we don't get any respect. How do we expect somebody outside of our community to respect us when we don't even respect ourselves inside our community?
And I use that. Sam, don't you think our backs are kind of against the wall now? I mean, we're at a point where we have to come together as a coaching body, or as you've seen, many programs getting cut. I think our sport is kind of up against the wall.
Darren, I hope and I pray that is the fact, that this will be the hammer over the head that will get us to realize that, hey, we've got to come out of this and we've got to be a different sport. We've got to be a different product. Because if we don't, and I don't mean to pull the fire alarm, we're going to get left further behind than we are. And, you know, I sound a little negative here probably, because I guarantee I'm one of the biggest optimists that there is out there. I believe you can get better, you can get better. I believe in trying new things. But we need to get on the head. Hey, we need to all get together, because we need to come out of this with a different look. I'm a person that I don't believe we were doing things correct before. I think we do a lot of good things, but as a whole, I don't think we were doing the best that we can. And I'm also a believer that when we come out of this, we're not going to be able to, even if that was the way to do it, we're not going to be able to come out of this and go back to what we were doing before either. Maybe that's a good thing. I'm kind of thinking it is personally. A lot of people won't agree with that, but I don't think we're going to have that option. So to recover from this pandemic, even if it gets over in 6 months, which hopefully it does, or tomorrow, it's not going to be a one-year recovery period or a two-year recovery period. I remember somebody telling me after the indoor championship, man, I'd be glad we get the next year and things will return to normal. Financially, things are not going to return to normal in a year. You cannot recoup the same amount of money in a year that you've been able to lose in year. You know, I'm not an analysis, but it's 4 or 5 years probably if we're lucky. And there's going to be a lot of challenges go forward, and we need to be proactive and find a common ground with all of us for the sport's sake to move forward. This isn't a popular statement either, but I hear this over and over, especially when somebody wants something that's not necessarily kosher. They're trying to find a way out. Oh, the student athlete. Oh, the student athlete. Oh, this is all about the student athlete. Well, I don't know any coach, or at least I hope I don't, who's not all about the student athlete. But I'm here to tell you, if we don't have track and field and we don't have cross country, there are no student athletes. They're of opportunities. So to me, it's most important that we protect and make the sport strong and make it valued so that there are student athletes and they have opportunities, and they have opportunities for years to come, just like all of us have.
Sam, I don't think that's a negative. You know, you're right. It's very optimistic. I don't think it's negative at all to identify the reality of what's going on. You know, with Minnesota dropping men's track and field, that should put every single track and field coach in this country on alert. You know, it's a Big Ten program that, you know, the Big Ten institutions are swimming in money, and surely they've clearly mismanaged their department, and that's a secondary conversation, but it's not. It's. I don't think it's negative at all to accept the reality that if it happens at Minnesota, it can happen to any institution in this country. You know, I said this when we had Gary on a couple of weeks ago. You know, if St. Louis University drops, you know, track and field, you know, I don't know if it makes a blip in the. It might make a little blip in the track and field community, but when it's Minnesota, that's a huge wave, and so I think it's at least my. What I've seen and kind of what I hear and feel, I feel like there's a lot of coaches that are coming together over this, which I think is a good thing. Not a good thing, you know, depending on how this vote goes in 2 days, in Minnesota. But if nothing else, there's some galvanizing, I think, in the coaching community over something like this.
I hope, John, that's true, and I think we're gonna need to find out.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out, unfortunately, one way or the other.
Yeah, we will.
Before long, even if Minnesota gets saved, which hopefully they will, or if they go down, it still should be a calling. Same with William and Mary, or all these other schools that are sitting out there that we're, you know, teeter-tottering on whether that's going to happen to us. You know, what gets forgotten, I think, is a side story in the Minnesota deal, too, is not only are they cutting men's sport, they're really taking away part of the women's, you know, as well. So, you know, I think most people have said back a year ago and said, oh, no women's program is going to get cut. Well, that's not necessarily true. Either. So we need to get focused in and put our heavy non-trust ways to the side.
You know, I think it's pretty easy for us all to agree and kind of get together on a program dropping, right? Like that's a pretty easy thing to rally around. But I think if we've seen anything, when there's any opportunity for a large group of coaches to get together where they have a voice and they have input into a major change within the sport, that's where things start to get muddy and selfish. And we, like you said, get caught in the minutia. Is there a different procedure or a better way maybe for those big picture things than giving voice to 1,000 coaches in a big open room? You know, and again, this may be an unpopular idea, but maybe for big things like the way the championships went or the way, you know, instead of debating on this qualification systems and things like that, maybe there's a smaller group of people who show up at the convention and say, hey, guys, this is how it's happening. And that's it. And there's no more, you know, stuck for 6 or 5 or 10 years trying to, you know, debate. Is there a different way where that could potentially happen? Is that even allowed to be done? Or, you know, is that even a potential solution? Let us worry about some stupid stuff that's not going to, you know, affect the whole of the sport. You know, give us something to be busy with, but, you know, leave the real marketing and the value creation and the, you know, big picture stuff to people whose job that is to do. I don't know if there's any thoughts on that.
Well, I think it goes back to the trust factor. You know, when you sign people to go do something, you need to trust them that they're going to – I'm not saying you can't question them some, but you need to trust them that they've done due diligence and they're coming back to you with the best scenario. If they haven't done due diligence and can explain it, that's a whole different story. But somewhere, I really think it goes down to trust and – ridding ourselves of this selfishness. Think of my program. I understand why you think about your program, but I go back again. The sport's got to be the most important. If track and field is strong and cross country is strong, that's going to make even the worst programs, I really believe this, in the country better. Well, we always want to point on football that they, you know, got all of our trinkets. Well, if I'm just going to throw out somebody, I'm probably going to get in trouble here, but you know,
go ahead.
Akron, I'm pissed at them because they dropped cross country, but Akron, if they're 0-12 in football, I don't know if they're 12-0 or 0-12. Let's say they're 0-12.
0-12.
0-12.
Than they have ever been. And that's got nothing to do with Akron. It's got to do with the sport of football. Because I can tell you, if Ohio State played football, Akron wouldn't make it till the next day before they taught football. But even though they're 0-12, they got better facilities, they got better salaries, they probably got better staff, they've got better facilities. Everything is better than it used to be. The reason that is because of football, the sport. So it's not just the top that rises, the bottom that can rise as well. And you know, I get accused sometimes of I've got an agenda depending on who I'm walking down the street with. Even though I can walk down one street with one person who thinks to the left, and down another street the person thinks to the right, but yet you know I'm doing the same thing. So somewhere along the line, you got to get off of that and believe and move forward in that. Hey, my program's going to be better. You know, this might not fit me the best of what I'm doing today, but down the road, my program is going to be stronger because the sport is going to be stronger. And I truly believe that. I think there's evidence of that all over the place. If you look at the successful collegiate sport, if you look at football, you look at basketball, you look at baseball, look at women's volleyball. All these sports have grown. All of them are top to bottom because the wave has risen of the sport. And it's important. If I'm in Ohio, since I started there, if I'm in Ohio, for Ohio State to be good in track and cross country. Because when they are, it makes it more important around that state and to those other state schools. When Ohio State doesn't care about it, they have less care about it for the most part. There may be exceptions to that rule, but there's not that many exceptions to that rule. But yet somehow I went to school at Boston Consulting. Small school, we had 7 scholarships. That was back when at the beginning when I was at West, there was 23 scholarships in Division I. And went to 14. We never had above 7. But yet we were competitive. I mean, we got second, sixth, and cross country while I was there. We were in the top 10 a couple of times in track, top 20 usually about every time. So just because we were small did not mean because we couldn't be good, and we certainly didn't have budgets, but we were good. People there worked well. They had a history of being good. Back then, the OVC was a heck of a conference, and it's just. But we have a tendency somewhere along the line between there and now. The way to get better is if you're kind of in the middle or the bottom, is not to rise up, is to take the guy on the top, pull him back down, and let's make him unsuccessful, and then maybe I got a chance of being more successful. I think that's a back-assers way to do it.
So Sam, you know, being that we're in a situation now where we're more distanced than ever, and you know, with the situation with convention this year, and What are some suggestions that you may have for us as a coaching body and for those of us in track and field to really brainstorm and make change at this point in the short term and long term?
Well, I think we need to do some real soul searching. And I guess if I'm going to give an example, I would say we're an alcoholic. And we need to go and look in the mirror and say, whoa, I got a problem. You know, I need to get a hold of this. And I think that's what we need to do as a sport. And to do it, we kind of got to get the individual coaches to buy into that. And then we search for answers on the way to go forward. This is probably one of the worst times to be for us to not get together as a group. But, you know, it is what it is, and maybe we need to try to find a way to make that happen over the next few months or whatever. But if we do find a way to do that, to me, that's a one subject gathering. It's on how do we get ourselves aligned for the future so that we can position ourselves to have our sport be valuable and place it so that it's going to have a place in Cleveland athletics for the long run.
I think it would be valuable. I think it would be extremely valuable over the next few months. While, you know, we have some downtime, our student athletes are going to be home. I think it would be really valuable at this point for us to try to get together as a coaching body in some capacity. I know the executive committees are meeting and things like that. But I do think it would be important for, you know, this situation and where we're at as a sport, just kind of an update, maybe like a state of the union type thing with our coaching body.
I think it's like coaching, and I haven't coached for nearly 30 years now. Mm-hmm. But I still think it's a lot like coaching. You know, sometimes you know that you have kids that have potential, and they're good kids, and they're trying, but they're not just focused. And you got to challenge them. And I think we need to challenge ourselves. You know, we need to get in the room. We need to challenge ourselves to be better as a whole, not just one program here or one conference there. We need to challenge ourselves to make the sport better. Put our own programs aside. Put our egos aside and develop some trust and respect for each other and figure out a pathway for all of us. Because, you know, guys, there's a lot of people, we got student athlete opportunities depending on what you do, and there's a lot of coaching jobs depending on what we do. And I know the naysayers will say, oh, you know, we are what we are, we just keep on going. Maybe you will, but if you do, I think we might exist, we won't be successful.
You know, I think we're, you know, in, you know, such a unique situation just because of the times we're in, you know, everything that's going on in our country with, you know, the racial injustice, the COVID, I feel like if we don't come together during this time, we're really missing an opportunity. You know, there's so many, you know, just kind of moments where it's like, you know, if we are going to come together and, you know, have some unified voice, and this is one of them.
Well, Scott, I think you're right. I think we do have some opportunities ahead of us. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, Sam, was, you know, with COVID happening and the expansion, the rapid expansion of like the use of technology, you know, streaming or just technology in the way that media is now consumed. How do you see that as like a potential opportunity or strength for track and field in the future?
Yeah, I think used properly, I don't think you can just totally go there. I really upset a guy at the NCAA a couple of years ago when we were trying to get get television. I got a meeting set up with their head of broadcasting, who's no longer there, thank God. And I was very frank with him. I said, we want to get more TV exposure. How do we do that? And he said, track and field, cross country don't need television.
Okay. Interesting.
Explain that.
Just got four head jerk reactions.
We only need speed. That's the only thing. That's good. That's good for track and field. It's where you need to be. You don't need to be TV. And we went back and forth, and he kind of hit me again. And I told him, I can't remember his name now. I think it was Chris. I said, Chris, let me tell you what. I believe that we need to explore all the streaming, all the new technology that's coming out, and we need to use that to our benefit. But TV is still the main need. And I said, because it's the NCAA, I said, I will buy 100% in that we only need to be in streaming mode the day you call me and tell me that the men's Final Four has decided not to be on TV anymore, because that's not the way that I have exposure. So back to your question, Tom, is yes, I think it's very important for us to use technology. And I'm always amazed that we have a sport that technology probably fits more than anybody things we could do. And we're probably the least technological users and groups that there are out there. It just blows my mind. Bring up that, hey, let's go with this. We started Keepers a few years ago. I would go down and sit on my knees, beg committee. I just like, oh, this would be terrible. I'd have to do this. I'd have to do that. Didn't mean, if we took Keepers away today, people would see.
I think I
live on Tiefers.
I think it goes back to what Mike was saying. Some of this stuff, it's like, we're just better off when it just happens and we learn to accept it and deal with it instead of, just being in there and all voicing our opinion.
Mike Holloway, father, told me a few years ago, he said, Sam, he said, we need to be told what to do and then just go do it. And if you don't want to do it, get out of the sport. And I believe in getting input from people, but in a way, I have faith that we can get there, but Mike's method might be the only way that we can get there. I'm not saying I should be the person to do that, but what I'm saying is we may need to be just told what to do. If we're not, it's like a young child. You can't make some decisions until they show that they can't make them, and then you're going to make them. Well, if we keep showing that we can't make good decisions, and decisions that are unselfish and for the betterment of the sport, then maybe that's what we need to be, the environment we need to be in. We're told what to do, go do it.
Would we be better off at, we're at the convention and we have so many proposals and we vote on them and, they show up, 60-40 and then it moves forward and it goes to another committee and they look at it. Would it be just better if it's like it passed or it didn't pass?
Yeah, I think it would. But these other committees, especially in getting the NCAA, they get – if you've got somebody on one of those committees who thought differently, then they want to point out that, a lot of people didn't want that, or there's, again, they should support the coaches. I'm going through a little screaming match with the rules committee, have been for two or three years now, and we put rule proposals through, and some of them, they don't even address. They don't pass them, they don't not pass them, and they don't give us any feedback on them. That's totally unprofessional.
Yeah.
We've gotten a new chair on that. Unfortunately, he's got 1 year left. Like me, Clayton State, Mike's done a pretty good job of trying to do that. Now, he hasn't been able to change it totally in a short time period, but we're making some progress. But that's just ridiculous. know, act professionally, be big boys and boys and girls, and don't do all this stuff for these selfish reasons. Do it when it's about the sport. We can all be about the sport. I know you all probably need to explain that, but that's the first thing we need to swallow.
I don't think you're wrong at all. It's got to be about the sport because we have livelihoods. We have jobs, as you said. We've got all that kind of stuff to worry about, and we're fighting over the minutiae of how big our starting line is or how big our logo is. We're not doing ourselves any favors of anything at all. You know, that's one of the worst things we can do to each other. No questions about that, for sure. I got to ask, one of the biggest things you've been very vocal on is, and from every single aspect, I've been impressed with it, is the University of Minnesota. And it isn't just the fact that they've cut, they're attempting to cut the program, because we cannot say it's fully cut until the board meets this Friday, if I'm not mistaken. But it is definitely right there on the chopping block. It's taken away from a lot of opportunities for walk-ons. And it's taken a lot of opportunities from African-American athletes. It takes away from just an unbelievable amount of people. And plus, the secondary market is how many student athletes they're going to cut after this. Women's students athletes are going to cut after this to try and balance everything out. You've been vocal on Twitter about it. What else can you talk about it?
Well, it's terrible for any program to get cut. You know, John brought that up a minute ago. He said, you know, maybe if we got cut at St. Louis, people wouldn't notice. Maybe it wouldn't, but it still would be bad. But at Minnesota, you know, what's so early about Minnesota other than it's getting cut, is administratively, they've manipulated the process in order to set the table to be able to cut sports. That's totally unethical. They have, they said part of the reason was budget. And when the budget got questioned, then they said, oh, it's Title IX. Well, maybe they've got a Title IX problem, maybe they don't. But they didn't have a Title IX problem until they created a Title IX problem. So this is, you know, if it were, they would call it premeditated. And it's just totally unethical. And but we've had such a little voice over the years because we've gotten ourselves disconnected. You know, people, oh, I got to talk. Do you talk to your athletic director? Oh, no, he walks down the hall. I try to go hide. I don't want to see that. A man or lady. We've got to engage people and be part of the conversation. Because when you're out of sight, out of mind, you know, you're a target, and it's just unethical. Is the reason I've been so vocal about Minnesota and just very very many aspects. I mean. You had a senior women's administrator who came out and said that she was appalled by how large the cross country and track squads were for women when she got there. It's the first thing she noticed. And that now if they're cutting, what did it matter? Because they're just walk-ons. They're just walk-ons? And why is a person like that even allowed in the educational community?
Yeah, agreed.
They should not be. No, at William and Mary, and I applaud both the staffs at William and Mary and Minnesota. They've gotten engaged. Their alumni have gotten very engaged. The student athletes have gotten very very engaged in trying to push these things forward and help people. I know you all know that the AD at William and Mary got let go yesterday. You know,
yep.
And I'm not saying that administrators are bad. There's lots of good administrators out there. But there's a lot of administrators that don't have good intent and are not about what's best for that university or that university's athletic program. They're trying to set the stage so they can go to another job. And right now, for some reason, it's become acceptable for when an administration mismanages something that the people who pay the debt are student athletes by having their opportunities cut. That makes absolutely, you know, it makes no sense. You know, I could go out and spend a lot of money, if I knew somebody else was going to have to pay off the debt rather than me. But I don't do that because I know I'm responsible for the bill. So, hopefully, William and Mary has gotten a little bit of a reprieve. At least now they're going to get a chance to stake their claim, and they're very organized, and I feel pretty good about they're going to be successful. They got through the first step is getting that lady out of there, and
yep, could be.
Hoping that Minnesota is going to get to where they get six regions to vote to stalemate this deal and put mud on the AD and president's face up there, but it's a fight. And somebody said this early on, maybe it was John and others that said it, is anybody, I don't care where you're at, I might name two programs, or I might name a half dozen programs in the country that are not possible cuts. And maybe the only public one is Oregon. And if Phil Knight were to die, they might even be susceptible to it. But right now, when there were some cuts going on, he said, "I'm a young guy. I want to coach. You know, what's it? My advice? You know, I'm really worried about being in this profession." And I said, "Brian, if you really want security, not that you don't have to be good at those places, but you really want security, probably the people that are going to have track and field and cross country to eternity are the military academies and the Ivy League." Shows how much I know. Brown tried to cut. Track and field, and they were successfully in pushing that back. But everybody needs to. We are. It's Thanksgiving. We're a turkey.
Man, that is a great way to put it. And we're cutting opportunities for kids, and especially kids just want to come to school. Come to one of school at the University of Minnesota, want to come to Nevada or St. Louis or UTRGV, whatever the case might be. We just can't do that because we are a lifeblood of the sport. No questions about it. We help administration. We help enroll now.
And I think as coaches, we all like to have a good one. Let's face it. We all want it. But I think we also can't forget that part of our responsibility is to develop people. Take people and try to work with them and make them better over time, and not just kind of thing. So, and I think that plays a little bit more toward the educational system. If you're helping people grow over time, so there kind of has to be a combination of that, I think, to be competitive. But we need to engage in. The athletics at the school are supposed to be about the students
who are
at school.
Yeah.
Gary said it, 2 weeks ago, is we have a priority problem. And he feels that's what the problem is in Minnesota. They have a priority problem. They have a $75 million deficit problem, but in reality, it's a priority problem.
Right.
When you're cutting walk-ons, it's just – And I'd actually use a different adjective, Sam. I wouldn't, unethical is good, but I just flat out call it corrupt.
I won't debate that one.
Yeah, I just think it's corrupt. I mean, when to manipulate, the idea of Title IX is to provide opportunities for women, to cut women walk-ons, then turn around and say, well, we've got this Title IX problem, so now we got to eliminate men's sports. That's nothing good. That's stinks. It's bullshit.
Yep. Title IX most of the time is interpreted to the benefit of who's trying to use it. And in colleges, for some reason, I'm sure because it's to that advantage, have kind of focused in most of the time on one measurement of Title IX. There's multiple measurements of Title IX. I'm not a Title IX expert by any means, but there's not just one way to measure Title IX. But schools, for the most part, especially if they're trying to drop a sport or manipulate something, they go to the single prong
metric. Yeah.
Yep.
The open measure. And
Sam, you know, and I asked this question to Gary, and I've still been thinking about it, you know, since I asked him, because you know, he kind of poo-pooed it a little bit. And I think he was, probably kind of in his own kind of right, what's right in front of him with the situation there at the University of Minnesota. But at what point, and I, what made me think of this, and I'll get to it here in a second, is was Leroy's letter to the association. At what point do we start, you know, getting elected officials involved in some of this stuff? You know, because you're talking a lot of money, a lot of federal money to a lot of these public institutions. You know, and again, when I see, you know, what's happened at Minnesota, kind of the manipulation of numbers, the manipulation of opportunities, like I said, I think that's corrupt. And I don't think when Title IX was formed, I don't think the writers of that law had this in mind. I can't imagine they had this in mind when they wrote that law. And so at what point do we start to lobby and do we start to get some outside influence to, because I think it's not only just a track and field problem. I think it's an intercollegiate athletics problem as a whole. At what point do we sit here and say, this system is not viable? And what we're doing, again, it's a priority problem. It's not a money. There's enough money in intercollegiate athletics to go around. That's not the issue. It's what are we prioritizing and why?
Well, I think one, we should have already done that. Unfortunately, you know, you can grab bag something. Might work. Percentages, it doesn't work. I'm a believer you need to try to approach things professionally. We're far behind on getting into that realm, John. We need to do that, but to me, and Leroy, and I'd seen his letter before it went out, addressed this, you know, we need to have a professional campaign. It's not a one-punch item. It's a continual punch over and over and over and over again that's professionally done, that resonates with people out on the street. We got a good story. We need a medium to tell it in. That includes we need to have lobbyists. We need to have some legal help to screen where appropriate. We've got to try, and we're trying. Hopefully we'll get there. It's not going to be a short process. We need to get people in those areas who are in some very high-end positions that will assign people to work with us on a pro bono basis. We'll never be able to afford what that would pay. You're talking about millions of bucks, but that's really what we need to do, and hopefully we stumble upon something that's going to work. Because we've got a great message, but we need to get it out. And right now, you know, politicians are all about staying in office or getting elected off.
Yep.
Give them something, getting that around, something that, you know, they're going to get exposure from or they're going to get a gain from. And as long as we're not a sight out of mind, that doesn't necessarily, you know, fit that amount. But that's something we need to strive for. We're way behind. That's happened, you know, before. I can't tell you how many talks about this. About 4 years ago, there was three of us that went out and met with the USOC. The CEO out there, and it was embarrassing. That the people in that office, as far as collegiate track and field was concerned, they knew nothing about it. You know, it was just flat embarrassing. So people who should be helping out, and people who should be concerned, they're either not concerned or they're only giving fluff to say that they are. So we just got to get out and identify some folks and say, hey, we need help? Can you help us? There's probably somebody out there. It's just a matter of hitting the right folks who are in the right position to kind of make that happen.
Well, Sam, I'd like to make a suggestion because I know Leroy talked about it last week, and I truly believe this. I mean, the student athlete has more voice and power than any of us, I think, at this time especially. And, you know, he mentioned a guy like Grant Holloway, you know, the almost like the face and the name of collegiate track and field in the last couple of years. And, you know, a guy like that, as influential as he is and as likable as he is, you know, all it takes is one student athlete speaking up at the right time, and you know, they can move mountains. And you know, what are some ideas? How can we empower our student athletes, and how can we push that message forward to them?
Great question.
Now you got to be at the table. You know, I love Grant. If you've met him, hey, you don't just get magnetized. I don't know. Outside of his personality matches his athletic ability. But, you know, the grants need to be, you know, in the room collegiately. They need to be in the room when SAC is meeting with the board of D1 board of directors or D2 board of directors or D3 board of directors. They need to be in the room when they're meeting with the Division I council. And they need to be on the page that the sport is on. And that's a total disconnect presently in that, you know, our Grant Holloway, I'm certainly not hitting on Grant, they're not in that room. You know, every now and then there's a profile athlete, but, you know, usually it's kids that are, they're good kids, but they're not in the everyday realm of getting out there and lining up, and they don't have a name, and you know, maybe they're a little bit neat because they're all caught up in that, hey, I got to come to the NCAA office for this meeting. We need somebody in that meeting who's going to speak up and say, hey, you guys are talking about doing this. We're against that. Do you know what that does for the sport I'm in? That is not happening. I would say for the most part, if you look at the SAC issues, most of them are pretty much close for the most part. And I think a lot of that is driven by the NCAA itself. That needs to become a more aggressive group on real issues. I mean, we've got a sport cross country. Out of all the sports in the NCAA, I mean, it's a great fit. You know, you got people who are competitive. You got people who are bright. It fits right in with the academic, athletic, you know, mission. It's the only game for the entire NCAA that doesn't have scholarships. How in the world can that be? How in the world can it especially be for women in Title IX? You know, it's just, so why aren't these students that are in SAC, and even that we've even over the years had some cross-country students that, why aren't they fighting that? Why aren't they bringing that up? You know, they're really not engaged. And I hear this from coaches is that, you know, hey, on campus, you know, they don't want us picking who's going to go on our SAC representative track or cross-country. And if they do, they don't want us trying to push an agenda with them. Well, that's exactly what should be done. They're supposed to be representing track and field, but they're supposed to be representing cross country or men's cross or women's track and field. That's their job. Get up there and represent it. You're not supposed to be representing the university. You're supposed to be representing your sport and your fellow students. I agree 100% with you on but that system is not producing that function.
I 100% agree with you on that one. No questions about it. Where do you see the sport going in about 5 years, 10 years? I mean, now it's hard. I normally could ask that question easily, but now with COVID, it's a little tough. But where would you like to see the sport in 5, 10 years? You know, where would it go?
Well, I would like to see put in a position where that it's going to be preserved for the future, for opportunities for student athletes and coaches, just like we've all had. But to do that, I'm 100% convinced we have got to change the way we operate on a daily basis in all three of our sports. And I don't want to be a naysayer and say, hey, track's not going to be around in 5 years, but it's not going to be around the way it should be in 5 years or 10 years unless we change. So where I'd like to see track and field in 5 or 10 years, I'd like to see them as changed sports that are no longer out of sight, out of mind, and that they have value to the people that participate in them, but also have value to the institutions that sponsor them. It doesn't necessarily have to be that, hey, we spent $10, but we didn't make $11 to pay for ourselves. There's a lot of extrinsic value out there that we can come back with as well. But we need to be looked on by the university president, by that athletic director, that cross country track and field are a valued part of our university, a valued part of our athletic department, rather than a burden. And so that's where I'd love to see us, because if we do that, I think we can be a strong sport, and I think we can set the table so that we're going to be preserved down the road. But if we keep looking at it as, hey, we're track and we're in the Olympics and we're in title, you can't drop us, we're an Olympic sport, I think we're going to be in deeper trouble than we are now and at a quicker rate than we are now.
Honestly, couldn't agree with you more. I think everybody on this podcast, on this panel that's at the table, couldn't agree with you more. One final question here. Let's ask this. Let's end on a bright note. How's that sound? Because we can keep going on this. And again, I know you're an optimist. You and I have had a lot of conversations about things, and some really good in-depth conversations. I've always valued them. As your time as the CEO of the association, what would be the best thing you've accomplished, or your most favorite thing you've accomplished?
I don't know. The fact that we have made some strides, I've got some pride on that. You know, we at least developed a stage. We haven't taken advantage of that stage, I don't think. You know, and I'm not really a big materialistic, guy. It was great that we got money the first couple of years I was here to fund indoors, which unbelievably wouldn't have done before. But that's a no-brainer. That should have already been.
Yep.
I'm glad we have TV covers than we ever had, but and we were going to have it for cross-country this time, but, obviously that got pushed aside in the fall. I'm proud of some of those things, because not only did we get it, we've had to kind of fight the NCAA to get that. We haven't had help from a partner. So materialistic things like that have been good, but I don't think those are the real measurables. They are to some people. I'm more concerned about things that we haven't got done in the next step, rather than looking back. And one thing I'm really disappointed about, a lot of this process that we can't control, is one, we can't get things done faster.
Nope, not at all.
And two, that at the end of the day, we don't trust each other, have respect for each other, and that we're not willing to believe that if the sport gets better, we're all going to get better. So my disappointment, I'm going to move to the disappointment rather than the accomplishment. My disappointment is that I haven't been able to convince us as a whole to get this done. That bothers me. I don't have a magic stick, and I'm not a full brush salesman, but that needs to get done. And I'm disappointed I haven't been able to get that done.
Well, Sam, hey, one thing I do want to say, you know, in my 15 years of track and field coaching, and one thing that you have done, and I know you have influenced a ton of collegiate and high school coaches with what you do at the convention and with the organization, and you have moved the coaching profession forward for track and field and cross country. I can tell you that. I promise you that.
Well, I appreciate that, man. I'll be happy if we can move it forward a lot more.
Well, we'll keep trying.
Absolutely. You've done an incredible job. We'd all agree on that. We've seen the convention go from, what, 400 your first year to over 2,000 last year. You saw the creation of the Bowerman Award as well. I mean, we've seen some stuff happen that I don't know if people thought would actually ever happen. You know, it's been incredible. So,
a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Well, hey, real quickly, the one I'm excited to see, and whenever it gets rolled out, is the Athlete Hall of Fame. I think that's going to be another wildly popular idea, and you know, another way to celebrate all our diamonds.
Unfortunately, you know, we were going to try to pull it off this year. We're going to be another year behind, you know, behind on that. But yeah, I think it's hard to. I won't say that I'm a history buff. But I respect history, and I think to go forward, you need to know what your past was. You need to go back also to what I've said several times tonight, respect. You know, we need to have respect for what people have done and their contribution, and to recognize them and to include them. You know, people are absolutely the worst sport. I'm competing, they're gone. You know, all these other sports, you know, they kind of all, or most at least, they offer opportunities for the people that lead them to somehow, you know, stay involved. And somehow we've lost that connection. I mean, I remember somebody telling me years ago, I can't remember if it's Curtis Fry or not, it might have been Curtis. South Carolina had a really good half miler back in the early 70s, and they also won the Form 8 at the indoor championship back then. And one of those members became a multi millionaire. And at the end of the day, he became a big contributor to the university and to the football program. Well, one of the reasons I mean, he didn't like track and didn't hate track, track didn't have any other than him just handing them some money. They had no connection for him. They didn't have any place where he could bring his family. They didn't have events going on. You know, he's just totally disconnected. So he went with avenues that connected him. And we have a lot of that. We need to get connected with our past to help make our future. Just like back a while ago, when Don mentioned about lobbyists or politicians and these sorts of things, we've probably got people out there, we just don't know it, you know, or they know it. You know, most of you have heard of the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm.
One died this year, I can't remember which one, but one of them's worth 50-something billion and the other one's worth like 48, you know.
Yep.
Well, the one who died, he was a pole vaulter at MIT. You know, George Steinbrenner's father was the coach at MIT. You know, we just
wow.
We gotta recognize these people.
Yeah.
We don't know who our own folks are. It's a sin.
Well, either way, Sam, I'm excited for that one because I think that's going to be another home run that has come out of the national office. So I'm excited for that. That's something the feather to put in your cap as well.
Absolutely.
I got it too, John. We're just looking for more smoke and mirrors. But no, it's really going to be great.
Yeah. No. And again, you've done an incredible job with everything you've done. We are impressed. We go on for hours on the things we've been impressed that you've done. And we're very thankful to be working under you essentially for best way to put it, and to be learning from you. So Thank you, Sam, for being on the podcast tonight. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you. Never forget, I work for you guys, and we just need to all get on the same page.
Oh, absolutely. We need to get on the same page. So, gentlemen, it was great to have you as always. We it is a riveting conversation. One, very, very thought-provoking. No questions about that there. Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you being a part of the podcast as well, taking a listen. If you found value in this, please share it. As always, of course, word of mouth without question is the best form of advertising out there in the country. So like it, share it, review it, share it with friends, shoot us an email, tell us what we're doing right, tell us what we're doing wrong. Whatever the case we can do to help you out, we would love to actually be able to do that. So thank you very much for making us a top 40 running podcast in the country. We are very, very excited. Something that we don't take lightly. We try and come each week with an incredible guest, an incredible set of questions that we can help inform, educate, and at the same time, hopefully are thought-provoking. You know, maybe we get some questions. We know you guys might not always agree with us, but you know what? That's the point of a coach's sitting down with the conversation, is making sure that we are, you know, pushing the buttons. So without further ado, we will absolutely try and do better again next week. Guys, have a good night. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Sam.